I was forged in the bear market, man. Nothing can faze me now.
Founder of the Bitcoin Way, Tony Yazbek. Absolutely no-nonsense type of guy. And after my wife, I reckon he's one of my favorite people on planet Earth.
No one is operating in the interest of the American people. Only way out is to opt out.
A lot of people in Australia are like, oh, that'll never happen here. In the last 5 years, we've lost 50% of our purchasing power already.
I have been completely radicalized in so many ways.
It's sovereign money, it's freedom money. But Bitcoin is only valuable if you hold in self-custody. Like, not your keys, not your coins.
Bitcoin is like having a key to the chains that have bound you for your whole life. And they're going to try to tighten the chains and hope that you don't find the key. And I think what that means is...
G'day, legends. Welcome back to G'day Bitcoin. I'm your host, Sean. Joining us today, very special guest. We have Michael Jordan, host of the Bitcoin Way podcast. He's also recently up on the main stage at Bitcoin Prague. Michael Jordan, how are you, brother?
I'm doing great. How are you, Sean?
Yeah, very, very well. This episode is going to be a little bit of meta, but for anyone that's interested in Bitcoin, maybe talking about Bitcoin, working within Bitcoin, speaking, educating about Bitcoin, mentoring in regards to Bitcoin, we're going to dive deep. But first off, you've only been in Bitcoin for a couple of short years. Was it 2020 that you entered the space?
Even newer, man. 2022. I was
bloody hell, baby.
I was forged in the bear market, man. Nothing can faze me now. I saw, like, I was in the early days of my journey when FTX, Celsius, you know, BlockFi, all of them started collapsing. So I'm unshakable at this point.
Dude, I love it. So did you come in sort of just before that happened? So Bitcoin was up and then you went through that brutal bear market?
So I came, well, I couldn't tell you, pinpoint exactly like the moment I became a Bitcoiner, certainly not like a Bitcoin maxi. I literally started on January 1st of that year studying sort of crypto. Blockchain. I've read some horribly boring books on blockchain. And I was fortunate. I had someone who sort of nudged me in the right direction right before I began my journey and gave me some people to Lynn Alden, Preston Pish, told me to listen to Preston's podcast.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's anyone else that stood out. I know I read the Bitcoin Standard within, I don't know, a few months of the beginning of the year. And
nice.
It became pretty evident quick. I think it was when Celsius and one of the others collapsed, maybe in like May of that year.
Yeah. I think Celsius and BlockFi were about the same time.
Okay. So maybe it was those two. And I had seen a couple of people, like Bitcoin maxis, predicting it and saying, like, this is a scam. It can't work. And then when the dominoes started to fall, I had to step back and, you know, oh, I guess the Bitcoiners are right about all this. Completely started ignoring all the other crypto nonsense. Went full in on Bitcoin and been chasing hard after more Bitcoin knowledge ever since.
Yeah. And something I think that you've done incredibly effectively is being in Bitcoin for 3 years now, is you've been working in Bitcoin for the last couple of years, last two years now, almost for the Bitcoin way.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible because, at least for me, went down like the rabbit hole. We're reading all the books, watching, you know, 6 to 8 hours worth of podcasts per day while I was employed driving around. And I was like, this thing is amazing. This is life changing. And I was like, I want to work within Bitcoin or I want to be able to contribute. So I started the podcast and I was talking about shitcoins at the start as well as Bitcoin. I'm glad that didn't last for too long. What a distraction. But I see it all the time and I have so many subscribers and stuff message and be like, hey, Sean, are you free for a chat? I'm like, yeah, of course. Let's touch base. No issue. And 9 times out of 10, they're like, how do I work in Bitcoin? I'm like, there's not a hell of a lot of jobs, but what are your skill set and like, where can you be able to provide value? But I guess coming back to you on this, where the matter of the conversation is going to start is, how did you get a job within Bitcoin, but let alone how do you get a job with the Bitcoin way? Like the way that I see it is the best company literally in the world to be able to teach people how to secure their Bitcoin. I don't know if there's any company that's better than what Tony and yourselves and the team at the Bitcoin way do. So I guess like number one, what made you want to pursue a job or a career working within Bitcoin? And then two, how did it come about with specifically the Bitcoin way?
Yeah, it was serendipitous, to say the least. I got lucky. So I was a client of the Bitcoin Way. So I guess it would have been the beginning of 24. I started working with them. I'd kind of gone through this whole, you know, I kept my keys on Coinbase, and then I found a better exchange, kept my keys there. And then I moved my coins to like a collaborative custody. I don't know. And it just became evident I was compromising on the custody. And heard Tony, as you can imagine, on the podcast. I think it was Safe Dean's podcast, and realized, okay, this, I just need training. I need someone to just teach me how to do this the right way. I have a semi-technical background, but I wasn't going to gamble with generational wealth and try figuring that out on my own if there was someone who does this day in and day out. So I was going through the process of being trained on how to take self-custody, and fortunately, I'd subscribed to the Bitcoiner Jobs newsletter for my background is in sales. So I had subscribed for, I guess, like the sales related positions. They were looking at the time to form like a sort of a decentralized sales team, basically. And they got a ton of applications coming in all at once. You know, I threw my name into the hat and I reached out to them privately because I was emailing with them anyway as their client. And I said, hey, you know, I'm working with you guys. Love the process. Would be, you know, I've got sales experience. I was leading the sales team at an AI startup at the time. You know, would love to talk about this. And so they took a call with me, and pretty quickly they said, hey, we'd love for you to be like the sales manager. Like, we've got so many people doing this. I said, okay, sounds good. You know, like, can I give my employer 2 weeks notice and just, you know, out of respect. And the way that we'd sort of structured it at the time didn't end up working as we had quite hoped. We've kind of made some improvements as to how we do that now. So I was left standing with not exactly the role that I'd thought, but at the very beginning, they said, hey, could you start a podcast for us? Hey, could you? And they just started, like, you know, coming up with other roles.
Small startup, you just do everything.
Yeah. And we still do in many ways. So, you know, I'm working closely with marketing. I'm helping with our hiring process now. So when someone comes to me and says, hey, you work in Bitcoin, how do you go work in Bitcoin? I don't have any real tangible advice because I just tripped into it. I mean, God ordained is the only way I can describe what happened. What I will say is, as I've gone through the process of hiring and trying to help us onboard people, I think there are, if you're looking to work for the Bitcoin Way specifically, there are things that you can do to stand out. And if there is any detection of nonsense, shitcoining, compromise on the types of hardware that you like or play around with or anything like that, I mean, that's a red flag for us. We're not interested. There are enough people who are, you know, who are focused on the mission and the philosophy of the Bitcoin Way that we can find those people. And those are the only ones we want to work with.
Yeah. Yeah. What I really like about Tony, and I was telling you, and I've said it so many times, is Tony, you know, sort of the main face, the founder of the Bitcoin Way, Tony Yazbek. For everyone, watch his Bitcoin Prague speech. It's incredible.
Oh, so good.
Absolutely no-nonsense type of guy. And after my wife, I reckon he's one of my favorite people on planet Earth, if not number one after my wife. Like you were saying, absolutely won't compromise on shitcoins or hardware wallets. And you see some of these Bitcoin influencers, obviously, because Ledger and Trezor have huge marketing budgets and stuff, they'll be promoting hardware wallets and stuff without shitting on the company too much that also supports shitcoins but aren't Bitcoin aligned in the slightest. And you're like, that makes no sense. Like, you're talking about Bitcoin, we've got this freedom money, why not just promote the best thing? There's plenty of options out there, but Cold Card, Foundation Devices, at least they've got the basics of the Bitcoin ethos. They're open source, they're verified, they're air gapped. One thing that you said, Michael, is that you tripped into it. I don't know if that's quite true. Like, it's not like you're just at home smoking weed or whatever, and someone knocked on your door and said, hey, dude, you want a job with the Bitcoin Way? And you're like, yeah, just let me have another pull and pull of the bong and I'll think about it. You were actively studying Bitcoin. You were a private client of the Bitcoin Way. You're already on the Bitcoin Jobs board. I'll get that link off you after the show and I'll put it in the show notes for everyone. And then once that job came up, you put in your application, but then you also emailed them as well. And people like, oh, it's lucky that you had their email. You had to pay as a private client to be able to get to that place. And I guess I just sort of want to like pull on this thread a little bit. When it comes to Bitcoin, nothing's ever handed to anyone. Like, you can jump on a podcast, I can jump on a podcast, we can say, read The Big Print by Lawrence Lepard, The Bitcoin Standard, Safe Dean Amuse, Parallel by Brian D. Mint, etc. Watch What's the Problem by Joe Bryan. We can say all that and people can just sit there and be like, oh, cool, this is good entertainment. But unless they pick up that book or watch that video or go onto the exchange and set up the exchange and connect it to their bank and everything like that, nothing's going to change in their life until something else changes. How do you define proof of work in your own life? And has that changed since you've come into Bitcoin?
Well, so I've always been a hard worker. I spent, you know, a decade in enterprise sales, selling into Fortune 500 companies. And it's not something that comes naturally to me. And I'm not a guy who wants to go out and make friends and go to, you know, social, you know, events and network, and like that's just not my cup of tea. But I think early on I had done the proof of, I had committed to, okay, this is a role that I'm going to take, I'm going to learn, and I just did it. And eventually you sort of overcome the hurdles that you feel at the beginning, that, you know, like you feel awkward, you know, going to a networking event or whatever. And so I think there's always been that. Since Bitcoin, I would say, since finding Bitcoin, my time preference has lowered immensely, as I think it does for many people. I think the biggest thing for me is, I think all Bitcoiners are more naturally curious than the average population. I think that maybe my superpower, to the extent that I have one, is I think I'm more curious than most. I don't have time to tinker and to do all the things that I want to do, you know, playing around with new hardware. Like I've got three little kids. I've got a busy life, and I work a lot of hours. Like there's just not a lot left for that. But maybe your point is valid that, you know, I was on the Bitcoiner jobs, you know, paying attention to all of that in my free time that I had. I was reading, I listen to podcasts when I work out, when I'm, you know, just when I'm cutting the grass, doing anything. And so I think I was able to compact what has taken a lot of people, you know, 5 or 10 years of being in Bitcoin, to grow their conviction. I mean, within 6 months of 2022, I remember I was at a wedding in June of 2022. And I remember telling my wife's cousin about Bitcoin and explaining to him why I thought the rest of crypto was something that he should be disinterested in. And so I must have gone pretty hard, pretty fast, and been open-minded. And I wouldn't have considered myself an open-minded person before Bitcoin. I would have considered myself a pretty closed-minded person. And now as I look back, I think almost everything, there are very few things that I believe to be true today that I thought were true 5 years ago, 4 years ago, or whatever. And so I think just having that maybe that was something that the guys picked up on, that I was curious, I was trying to figure this stuff out, continue to learn, and they thought, hey, this is a guy who could, you know, be a podcast host and ask people questions and engage with them. And you know, so I'm sure there are ways that I teed myself up for the opportunity, and I think there are ways that I did kind of stumble into it to some degree, and you know, a lot of they could have ended up with a lot of other people. I'm grateful it's me, and I work hard to justify the decision that they made for them.
Yeah, I think, you know, talking to Tony and stuff, everyone loves you, but watching your podcasts and stuff, I tune in about every week and watch one. It's always just pure signal. It's fire. If you've still got your Bitcoin on exchange or you're looking to take your Bitcoin security to the next level, I've partnered with the Bitcoin Way. They offer live help for setting up cold storage, running your own node, keeping your Bitcoin private, planning for the future, using multi-sig, and so much more. They never touch your keys. They will not touch your coins. Instead, they'll show you how to buy and keep them safe. If you want to make your Bitcoin setup safer, you can book a free 30-minute call and have a chat with them. Safe Dina Moose, the author of the Bitcoin Standard, Natalie Brunel, Preston Pish, and so many more recommend the professional IT cybersecurity team. Couple of outstanding things here. You can see they've been featured in Forbes, Bitcoin Magazine, Bitcoin Prague, Zero Hedge, Simply Bitcoin, the Bitcoin Safe Dean, the Bitcoin Standard podcast with Safe Dina Moose, Bitcoin News, obviously G'day Bitcoin for a long time. They're the world experts in helping people become self-sovereign. It's not just about protecting your Bitcoin stash. Yes, they will help you do that in a very easy to understand step-by-step process. But from there, they can help you secure your data. They are your personal cybersecurity IT experts. And then step number three is getting a second passport, a Plan B residency. The team, very cheap, very affordable for people that are looking to take their sovereignty to the next level. You can find out more about their services. When you first log in to their website as well, they have got a free 3-minute quiz to allow you to check if you are doing your cybersecurity, your setup correctly. I urge everyone to jump onto the bitcoinway.com. I have put a link into this description for everyone. Could not recommend them enough. I've used them personally before I ever partnered with them for the channel, friends and family. They asked me to help them out. I'm like, go to the world experts. That is the Bitcoin way. So reach out to the Bitcoin way today. I want to talk about the podcasting. It's going to be meta on meta, but you're saying, let me phrase it this way. Do you reckon, you said Bitcoin's changed you in the way that you perceive things and approach things, and you're always really curious, and you said Bitcoin is in general are more curious to the average population, but has Bitcoin radicalized you or your thoughts in any way in the way that you perceive the world and the way that you interact now?
Yeah, I don't want to get you canceled.
I say some pretty outlandish shit on here in the video with coming up with Daniel Prince. That's some deep rabbit holes, man, so...
He's a good one. Well, I don't.
I think we're safe.
Okay. Well, I would never take my own life. I'll say that. So
me either.
Yeah. So I have been completely radicalized in so many ways, and I think there's obviously a negative connotation to the idea of becoming radical. I think if you look at the political spectrum, for example, at least in the U.S. I'm not going to speak for Australia or anywhere else. If you are willing to break free of the tribalism, it is entirely evident that we have a uniparty system. No one is operating in the interests of the American people. And the only way out is to opt out. And I think there are, what I tend to emphasize and focus on are the small ways that, you know, you can opt out of the education system, you can opt out of the monetary system, you can opt out of the healthcare system, you can opt out of a lot of things. To what extent that, you know, makes a big long-term impact, I'm just one guy trying to, you know, raise my family in a way that I see fit. But my hope is through the podcast, through my interactions with the people in my life, you know, we begin to build this sort of peaceful revolution from the ground up, and I get more people opening their eyes. And I think I've probably hopefully resonated with some people on the podcast. I think there are a handful of people in real life that I've connected with who I think have made some material changes. It's still an uphill battle, though. You know, it's a very difficult thing, especially like where I live. I don't live like in a nice area, like a fancy area, but it's affluent, and people are relatively comfortable, and they don't want to imagine, they like voting for their Republican candidate, you know, where I am, and they think Trump or the next Republic, JD Vance, someone's going to come and save them. And I'm just like, man, if you just opened your eyes to what these guys are doing right now, like you would be a lot like, and you understood that if the other side was doing the exact same thing, you'd be all over them. This just isn't the solution. And so we could go down 20 rabbit holes that I'm probably not comfortable talking about because I care too much for my safety, for the benefit of my wife.
But yeah, understood.
Sufficient to say, suffice it to say, I've been radicalized in many ways.
Yeah, it's crazy. Same with me and the uni party. We've got like our political system's cooked as well. I think everywhere in the Western world's pretty fucked up at the minute. But how's your wife dealt with the radicalization of yourself? Has she come along on that journey, or has she sort of stayed fairly grounded where she was and then you've just gotten more and more radical?
That's a good question. She is so patient and loyal that it's sometimes hard for me to tell to what extent what I say resonates with her and to what extent she's just patient and loyal and, you know, accommodating of these crazy ideas that I bring to her. You know, there are a lot of big world events, you know, one of them may or may not have happened in September of 2001 that, you know, for the longest time, I just believed like, the mainstream narrative, this is what happened. And then if you just kind of spend an hour looking into it, your views begin to change. You're like, hang on, none of this makes sense. Like literally none of it.
That's right.
But if you don't go look at it, then you just sort of, you know, take at face value, whatever. In the US, we've got Fox News as the conservative, you know, CNN's the liberal mainstream outlet. You just take it at face value that this is the story. This is the narrative. I think she has become more open-minded to a lot of these things because what I'm able to do is like, she's never going to go watch podcasts, read books. These aren't topics of interest to her. Yeah. But if I can talk to her for 20 minutes or 30 minutes and kind of go through the evidence that I've uncovered, she's a hell of a lot smarter than me. And so it becomes easy for her to like, she's forced as someone who, she's talking to someone she trusts. She's forced to at least confront the reality that maybe there's more to the story and that everything she's been told is not the case. Where I'll say she's been particularly made in my view, a lot of progress is we've got three young kids with health. We're done vaccinating. Our kids don't have like a normal primary care doctor. We're homeschooling now.
I was going to ask about that. Cool.
We can get to homeschooling. She's woken up to that a lot, that big pharma, big food, they hate you. They don't want your kids to be healthy. And that's been fortunate because I would impose that on my family. At this point, I'm so far radicalized that I would impose no vaccines, none of that on my family. The fact that she's gotten on board has made it much easier, obviously, for us to be in agreement on some of these things.
That's interesting. Like here in Australia, they hate strong men just in general. They're just, you're toxic and they want men to be feminized and they want them to be weak and disempowered and stuff. And you said, you know, that you would impose it if you had to. Obviously, I think that's the right thing as well, not in a violent way or whatever, but this is the right way. These are the rules under the house. We're going down that path. Has that been something that you've grown into through Bitcoin, or you're already sort of that way inclined and it's just the conviction of Bitcoin and everything you've learned that's really allowed you to be able to hold that line?
So I think that Bitcoin has... Actually, I think Bitcoin has probably changed that a lot for me. I've always been rather traditional. Like, I don't think if you ever asked my wife or I, who's the head of the home, we would ever disagree that it's me, right? Something I've noticed though in the last few years, I don't know exactly what it was that triggered it. A year and a half, two years ago, I went out and bought a motorcycle, and I told her I was buying a motorcycle, and she didn't want me to buy a motorcycle, but we never even had a conversation about it. Like, I just told her like, hey, I'm going to pick up a motorcycle, you know, on Saturday or whatever. And that was that. She wasn't happy with it, but in general, that's not the way we operate. Like, I don't just impose my will on everything.
Yeah.
My view of marriage is you try to be as democratic as you can, come to an agreement on every possible thing that you can, because that's going to bring peace to the home if you can do that. And the important thing that you can do is find a spouse who generally agrees with you, generally understands the roles that you've adopted. And when you have those one-off moments, that's when you need to know who is actually in charge here, because someone has to make the final call. And I have friends who are, you know, they have all sorts of marriage issues and it's like they're negotiating everything. And it's like, who gets to make the final decision? Because this could be put to bed if one of you could just make the final decision, but instead you're going to bicker about it for the rest of your life. And to me, that makes for an unhealthy marriage. Like what my wife and I have is a healthy marriage, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we don't argue hardly ever. Like there's just nothing to argue about because we generally agree. And if we don't agree and I have a strong conviction on the subject at hand, I will make the final call. And, you know, if that were to be vaccines or homeschooling or any of these things, that's what we would do. And that's what she signed up for. And that's what I signed up for. And I think Bitcoin has probably furthered my confidence that some of these traditional values that we've gotten away from are exactly what we need to be moving back to. So I would say my marriage has gotten stronger since Bitcoin because of that.
I love that. I definitely want to come back to the homeschool, and maybe we'll come back to the vaccines. But of most interest, it's something like I've had Walker, America on, Nico from Simply Bitcoin and stuff. And you'll bring on other podcasts or Robin Sayer and stuff. And you're like, before the conversation, I don't want to talk about being a Bitcoin podcast and stuff. So I've actively avoided doing that. But I think like the theme of this conversation, working within Bitcoin, putting in the proof of work, it probably could be very helpful for some people that are potentially thinking of what can they just do? Because there's no permission to start a podcast. You pull the phone out of your pocket and you can talk to it. And then you can post online, Google, YouTube. They can shut down your account if they don't like what you're saying. But there's really like very little barrier to entry to be able to do it. And it's something that takes a while to be able to build up. But it's something people can do instantly to be able to contribute to the conversation of Bitcoin. What's that journey been like for you? Like you went into the Bitcoin way as a sales manager. That was the mindset, the role. And they're like, start a podcast for us. We interrupt this video to bring you a really quick PSA. How safe and secure is your Bitcoin seed phrase? So many people still hold their 12 or 24 words on paper. Then they sort of upgrade to something like this. This is a titanium version. It does hold all 24 words, but look how big it is. This device, this revolutionizes it. It changes it. It makes it so much more secure. What this does, you can see there's a 1-inch washer on there. It comes with these punches that are almost microscopic. They give you a magnifying glass to be able to see the end of them because you really can't read what that says. And then they give you titanium washers, nylon washers. Think about this for x-rays, body scanners, metal detectors, border passes, just around the house with the metal detector wand, stainless steel as well. These are great for hot wallets. The titanium, it's going to survive a house fire. But this, compared to this, look at the size difference to it. You could fit 8 of these on this one plate, yet it still contains all 24 words. Imagine how easy that is to be able to hide. Now, the team have given a discount code for everyone. There is a link below. Now, back to the show.
Yeah, it was, I was a bit nervous at first because it's not something I probably would have proactively done on my own. But what the one thing I've been grateful so far in my journey at the Bitcoin way has been I haven't said no to anything. And so like last year earlier this year when they asked me to speak at BTC Prague, it was kind of optional. It was sort of thrown to me because just some circumstances, the logistics didn't work out for someone else. And they said, hey, do you want to go speak in front of, 2,000 people on the main stage at BTC Prague? And I just said yes. And the reason was because I knew that if I didn't do that, and that was my chance to speak at BTC Prague, and someday we reach hyper Bitcoinization, and everyone's looking back at 2025 as the early days. If I said, "Oh, I could have been on stage, but I didn't want to, or I didn't know what I'd say," I knew I'd regret it. The same thing was true with the podcast. As soon as they asked me, the last thing I wanted to, first of all, say to my brand new employer was, I don't know. But I knew this is a great opportunity to talk with some of the people who I've been listening to on podcasts. I've been reading their books. There are so many questions I would love to ask someone like Larry Lepard or Saifedean or any of those guys. Daniel Prince, I love Daniel. And so this is my chance to do that. And I completely agree with you too. The barrier, if that's something you're thinking about, for anyone listening, the barrier to entry really is low. I mean, I'll give you like a couple of tools. Like, we're using Riverside. That's what I use for our podcast. Very simple. You click record. It can create like shorts and clips for you automatically. If you want to get an editor and someone to brush everything up, you can do that. I use Buzzsprout to then push the audio version to Fountain, Apple, Spotify. And I mean, you're talking, I don't know what the cost is anymore, 50, 100 bucks a month, maybe, for the tech that you need to get a halfway polished podcast out into the world. And I think really the only question from there comes down to, do you want to do, long form stuff, short form? Are you going to monologue? Are you going to invite guests on? And I can assure you, if you don't think any, you know, no one's going to come on your podcast, like, start with me, because no one cares about me. Like, it's probably harder for you to get, you know, Saif Adin on your podcast if you're just starting out. I know.
Yeah, I'm still trying to get Saif on.
Yeah, I was fortunate. We sponsor his podcast, so I had him on a while back. But, you know, a lot of the people I talked to early on were, you know, names that they weren't like household Bitcoin names. But there are a lot of people like myself out there who I think if you send me a message and you say, hey, I'm starting up a podcast, could you join? I'd be happy to come on, you know. And there are people far more important than me in the space who would also gladly come on. You just need to ask the question.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when I went Bitcoin only, I don't know if it was my first Bitcoin podcast, but it was like really early. And I reached out to Natalie Brunel and said, maybe I'd done a couple or whatever, but I'm like, it seems like there's so many men in Bitcoin. I'd love to be able to get like a female perspective on it. Would you be interested to come on the show? And she's like, yeah, sure. And I'm like, whoa, like, this is amazing. You know, she's got one of the biggest Bitcoin podcasts and just said, sure, straight away. A little bit of, other tips and tools that may be able to help people on this as well is like, take Michael up on that offer, take myself up on that offer, just reach out and send those texts, but do it strategically. Like, this is all a game, or life's a game, or whatever. And the way that I've found it and starting out is, if you go for someone like Saif Adin straight away, they're so busy, they get all these inquiries and stuff. But if you start with like Michael or myself or whatever, and you can be like, hey, do you have anyone else that you think might be interested in talking on the podcast? If they had a good experience, they may be able to lead you to that person. Or once you've had that on and then you've posted that podcast, then you can reach out to someone that's maybe a tier higher, even though Bitcoin's like fairly neutral. You know, if you go DCB, A-list celebrities within Bitcoin or whatever, start at the lower one and then leverage that and then message somebody else. So you interviewed like a D person, go to a C person, be like, hey, I just had Sean on. And would you be interested in coming on the pod or whatever? But also like, spend time interacting with them on X or on Nostr to be able to provide value, share their things, comment in a smart, articulate way. Like, the more value that you can provide to them, I think the more receptive they're going to be. And then also realize, like, everyone's pretty bloody busy, so they may not get back to you straight away, so don't, you know, pester the shit out of them or things like that. Just, you know, play it cool, take your time. And Bitcoiners, or anyone that's been here for a while or a little bit of time but they've put in the proof of work, realizes Bitcoin's not going away. We're not going away. So it's better to be able to play the long game instead of be like, hey, come on my show, come on my show, come on my show. You haven't replied to me, fuck you. And like, I'm out, you know, and then you're going to ruin that chance. But then they're going to talk to somebody else and then you get a bad name and stuff. It's better just to take the time and play it safe. What are the other opportunities out of the podcast, directly or indirectly, that have come across? Because obviously you've got the opportunity to talk to the best and the brightest people within Bitcoin, which pretty much translates to some of the best and brightest people or thinkers in the entire world.
So opportunities that have come just from meeting some of these folks, talking to some of them. I mean, there's you know, one of the things that's cool that we do, and I'd encourage anyone who is just finding out about the Bitcoin Way, go to our website, www.thebitcoinway.com, subscribe to our newsletter.
Is so good.
Yeah. So the newsletter is great. Comes out every Sunday. It might be Monday for you. But Sunday, that gets sent. And, one of the things we'll share with newsletter subscribers is like webinars that we have. So something we do once a month, usually about once a month, is we'll have someone on, you know, like we've had Larry Lepard, we've had Natalie, we've had Saif Adin, handful of really, really smart people, big names in the Bitcoin space who have come on. And we've done a sort of a variety, like Larry Lepard did a presentation on sort of the macro outlook, like making the case for the big print. And then he spent 40 minutes taking questions from the audience. And so
like, what an opportunity.
Yeah. So like, we're doing that again here in a couple of weeks with, I don't know when this podcast is going out, but we're doing that again, mid-December with him, but it's going to be a straight hour of Q&A with Larry. So bring your questions, but you only know about that if you're following us on social media, you know, subscribe to our newsletter, that kind of thing. So
yeah,
I'd encourage you to do so. Those opportunities have been great because I get to sit there and moderate a Q&A with Tony and Natalie, like two, like opposite ends of the spectrum. And in terms of temperament in the Bitcoin space,
completely,
very, very smart, very, you know, competent in their own right. And I get to sit there and field questions for them and chime in if I think it makes sense. So like those opportunities come up. I think the fact that I was doing the podcast probably lent itself to me being the person that they asked to speak at BTC Prague, because I had some, you know, I was a familiar face to some people and, you know, had talked to so many people. Like there wasn't really anyone else on the team who was actively doing public, you know, appearances of any kind. And I at least had the podcast. So yeah, when you put yourself out there, it's, it really does open a lot of doors. And to the point you made, yes, start with someone like myself. Start with someone like a D-list person. I can introduce you to a handful of C-list. I can introduce you to a B or an A-list person or two, you know, once you kind of got going and, you know, felt like that was something I'd be comfortable doing. But when you just, like, what's the mean? Like, you can just do things, right?
Just do shit.
You really can. Like, you really can. And point a camera at yourself, you know, spend $50 on a slightly better microphone or, you know, like if you want to invest a little bit. And then eventually, like I've got a whole studio set up now because I've been doing this a while. And, you know, you can justify the cost of those things after a bit. But yeah, just put yourself out there, figure out what you're best at. If you're not a podcast type person, go write articles, right? Like, you know, get a Substack going, start a newsletter, you know, write an ebook. You know, you can do so many low cost things that lend that your skill set it lends itself to. I think there will never be too many Bitcoin podcasts or books. I know it's almost like a joke in and of itself, but different people resonate with different groups of people in different ways. You know, I've been on a couple of podcasts with some women in Bitcoin, and I told them afterwards, I said, keep doing this because I'm not a big like diversity, equity, inclusion type guy, obviously, but I'm like, my wife doesn't want to hear Tony and I talk about Bitcoin and like, you know,
right? Your wife sounds like my wife.
Yeah. She's the sweetest person you'll ever meet. But like, if I sent her, one of Natalie's, you know, podcasts and I said, hey, this is a topic that might really interest you, I think she'd be more inclined to it. And then she'd start to love Natalie and like we'd bring a new Bitcoiner along. So, you know, don't sell yourself short. I mean, if you've ever watched my podcast, I'm hardly like a personality. It's just, you know, a matter of right time, right place, and then taking action to go do it. And I think a lot of people would be surprised at just what they could accomplish if they picked up a microphone, picked up a camera and hit record.
What you just said there, right time, right place. Earlier, you were saying that you're lucky and you just tripped into it. Right time, right place. With proper planning and preparation, that's what I call luck. That's how I define it. So if you want to call yourself lucky, like 100% you're lucky, but it's not that mythical luck, you know, that people dream about when they're broken their mindset.
I would say I'm the kind of guy who wakes up early, works out hard, works hard, spends as much time as possible with my kids, with my wife. And there are very few moments in any day that are not intended to serve someone else. And I think that's maybe the proof of work, right? Yes, there's a right time, right place, but it's when that meets the person who's willing to say yes to go speak on stage or yes to start a podcast or yes to, you know, to do whatever. And like, you know, there are a lot of little things I did at the Bitcoin Way where it's a, hey, can you jump on a call, you know, like a welcome call with someone, they want to learn about our services. We think, you know, and you've been through the process, you know, enough. And I say, yes. Yeah. I'd be happy to, you know, help. And, and who's more credible than someone who's gone through the process and, you know, sort of gone on this journey of coins on exchange, coins in collaborative custody, and now, you know, pure self-sovereignty. So, I think just saying yes to all of the important things and all of the opportunities that come your way. And if it doesn't stick, then, you know, find the next thing to say yes to.
I love that. It sort of reminds me, I don't know, 7 years ago or whatever, back when I was working a bullshit job, we're on the roads and building roads. And it's like my first week or week one or whatever, but it's like at least the first couple of days. Like I've always been very busy. I'm getting paid. I signed up to work by the hour, so I'll fill that hour with work. If there's nothing to do, I'll go find something else to do. So anyway, I was literally sweeping the road, like the gutters, you know, when it rains and stuff. And these, I won't discriminate in his looks or whatever, but not a very healthy person, older person, been working there for 20, 30 years or whatever, just totally checked out of life. And he came over to me, he's like, Sean, you need to stop that. I'm like, why? He's like, you're making us look bad. I'm like, no, buddy, you are making you look bad. I'm working at the moment. This is what I got employed to. I just signed that contract. They employed me just last week. So I'm doing what I meant to be doing. What are you doing? He's like, fucking that. It didn't go over well since then. But I like stayed in that role for a tiny little, I don't know, a couple of months or whatever, and moved on to another role really quickly. And they're like, oh, you're a kiss ass or you're a suck ass or a suck up or whatever. And you're like, no, I'm just doing what needs to be done. I'm going over and above because I don't want to stay in this situation. This just a means to an end to be able to achieve my goals, my life or whatever. Of course, I'm going to rise above everyone else. I'm going to be the best that I can be, not to be better than them, but to be better than myself so that hopefully that we can continue to step into these opportunities. I think that's important with everything. But a couple of things that you've mentioned, you've said the word collaborative custody a couple of times. There's the same within Bitcoin, not your keys, not your coins. I think the worst thing people could do is hear about Bitcoin, they hear about that it's this freedom money, like literally freedom money, it's sovereign money, it's what's going to dictate, I think, the free people from the fiat slaves, the economical slaves in short order. That's sort of my beliefs with it. But Bitcoin is only valuable if you hold in self-custody, if, like not your keys, not your coins. That's my belief. If you don't hold the Bitcoin, if somebody else does in a collaborative custody or it's on the exchange or it's in the ETF, my belief is they're fucked up. And that could be for a couple of reasons, like just missing the information, which is probably the most likely. They just don't know that you can do this, or they don't know how to be able to do it. Or somebody, like worse, has led them astray and saying, oh, this is easier. You just buy the stock, you know, BlackRock's Bitcoin or whatever. And it's just going to work like you've been buying all your other stocks. But you go down the collaborative custody, we'll hold one of the keys for you if you lose it or whatever. But then you're like starting to hand away power, and that defeats the whole purpose of Bitcoin. Obviously, with the Bitcoin way, as I said sort of at the start, the Bitcoin way are the best in the world at teaching or mentoring people how to be able to take self-custody of Bitcoin, not your keys, not your coins, but then to be able to like go through the steps systematically to be able to learn. Before we sort of talk about what the Bitcoin way does specifically, from your experience working at the Bitcoin way, what have you seen like the things that trip people up the most, or they're the most hesitant to actually take control of their Bitcoin?
So I think there are probably a few things. One of them is a fundamental misunderstanding of why Bitcoin appreciates in value. I think a lot of people, they hear it's scarce, and so number go up, it's like digital gold, and so I'll buy the ETF because I think it's gonna, and it's like, no, if you understand the state of macro, you know, you look at in Australia, in the UK, in Canada, I mean, some of the absolute insanity being rolled out by government, it becomes like Tony's experience in Lebanon feels like this extreme example, currency collapse. He walked away with $70 in his pocket. And what people don't realize is that, yes, it started with Lebanon, but nobody is immune from that. Like you have to begin to recognize that the same dysfunctional policies that brought Lebanon to its knees are already in place in all of these other places. It's central banking, it's money printing, corrupt politicians, you go down the line. And you have to realize that the music stops at some point for everyone, I think. And I don't know if that's in 2 years or 5 years, 10 years or 50 years, but it doesn't really matter, because when you begin to recognize the corruption, the fact that there's no one coming to save you, and like you really internalize that, you become obsessed with self-sovereignty and wanting to hold your wealth and wanting to educate your kids yourself and wanting to do all of these other things that we could get into. It becomes obvious. Like every day, the decisions I make, and I don't mean to go on a tangent, but there are a lot of things that I don't do because I feel like if I did them, I would be casting a tiny vote to institutions that I want nothing to do with. And like the example I always use is like, I literally have not eaten dessert in 3 years.
Let's like, go.
The reason is because if I open that, I don't know what you got. If you guys have, do you have Oreos in Australia?
Yeah.
Because sure do. So man, I used to be able to pound some Oreos and I haven't eaten any of them in 3 years. And the reason is because I don't want to fund with any of my value that institution that is trying to poison me. And then the people on the back end who say, hey, we got a pill to fix, you know, the fact that you poisoned yourself. And then the healthcare system that says, hey, you know, now that you're fat and obese and you need to go, you know, do these medical treatments or whatever, like I want nothing to do with it. I want to completely opt out. And so my point is when it comes to financial self-sovereignty, the same is sort of true. If you are trusting a key to someone else, if you're working with a company that supports shitcoins, if you're buying the paper Bitcoin, if you're speculating on a treasury company who may do great in fiat terms, it just doesn't matter. I'm completely disinterested. Like, I think I'm grateful that Saylor has orange-pilled a lot of people. Could not possibly care less if MicroStrategy buys more Bitcoin, if they go bust, if they go to the moon and way outperform Bitcoin in dollar terms. Like, it literally doesn't matter to me because it's completely detached from the notion of self-sovereignty, and that is my sole pursuit. So when it comes to self-custody, where do you want me to go with this? Like, I could sort of break down like why I left collaborative custody, why self-custody itself is so important. Where would you like me to go?
I think that's probably, really pertinent. Like most people, you get to talk to Tony, I get to talk to Tony and stuff. You're right deep into it, but I think because you're so deep into it and you work within the space, I think that could be the most helpful conversation of why, left collaborative custody and why self-custody is the most important thing. Like, just for context for everyone, if you couldn't take self-custody of Bitcoin, it would be worth exactly $0. Mm-hmm. If that part didn't exist, but I'll just hand it over to you and if you want to go down those rabbit holes.
Yeah, so self-custody is the revolution. I mean, as much as any other aspect of Bitcoin, I think. You know, you talk about scarcity, like all these very fundamental, like you can't have one without the other. I get all that. But when it comes to, I was in a collaborative custody setup and the company started supporting shitcoins. And that was like the red flag that I needed to at least begin, you know, looking for like, what's the alternative to that? I don't think I understood like exactly how pure self-custody worked. I wasn't allowed to run a node, which I heard more and more people talking about, hey, you need to run a node. Like that is participation in the network. And I'm kind of just a purist sort of guy. So I was like, I feel like I'm making a lot of compromises here that maybe I don't fully understand, but don't seem quite right. I had to KYC myself. I remember getting an email from the company and they were like, hey, we're going to be down for maintenance between, 10 p.m. and midnight. And I was like, okay, so it is no longer permissionless, censorship resistant money because your app is going to be down. And like that was, I think, the moment. And I think I happened to get one of those emails right after I'd heard Tony on the podcast. And I was like, This is exactly what I've been waiting for.
Let's go.
You know, and a lot of people, there are technical reasons too, like the 203 multi-sig using a third party. Like, it's not just two keys you need. Like, there are configuration files that you need to recover in a worst case scenario. If the government were to co-opt, one of those companies, shut them down, it would probably be impossible. I think I could be wrong. I'm not making any blanket statements here. It would probably be impossible for some people to recover their Bitcoin because they probably don't have what they really need. And it would be very, for the people who had kind of done it right, it would be very difficult and very painful. And they would probably come to the Bitcoin way and say, can you help me through this process of recovering my Bitcoin?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, I'm just going to skip all that stuff. Like, why would I go through all this? I'm not an idiot. I can figure out how to secure my wealth. Probably the biggest concern for most people is I don't trust myself. It's a single point of failure if I take self-custody. So, there's this hesitation. The reality is there's only a single point of failure in self-custody if you choose to allow there to be a single point of failure.
That's
right. There are plenty of ways you can make copies of things, secure them, separate your seed phrase, geographically disperse them. Like you can get creative. You don't have to get fancy. You can get creative though. And there's no natural disaster. There's no anything that, you know, would necessarily shake you out of your Bitcoin in self-custody, but you have to have it done right. Like you can't make rookie mistakes. You know, I think that's the benefit of hiring the Bitcoin way.
That's right.
We literally have a team that sits on calls all day, every day, guiding our clients through self-custody. We've never had a client lose Bitcoin. And the beauty of it too, is when it's in self-custody, you're less tempted to, like, it's a little less convenient, right? Like that's where like my savings are. And so I'm less tempted to go buy stuff I don't need. I'm less tempted to go speculate on, you know, Bitcoin treasury companies. Not that I feel that temptation anyway, that so many seem to, but it's just sitting there. And really all I need to do with it is, you know, occasionally load it onto a hot spending wallet so I can, you know, have Bitcoin to spend and use it as money. And other than that, I sleep like a baby knowing that no one else can touch it. No one else knows how much I have. No one knows anything about it. So it's a beautiful setup.
It truly is. And for context, I've said it, I think, twice on this show, but when I started out in Bitcoin by myself, or crypto, then Bitcoin, found Bitcoin within 2 weeks. But I came up with this amazing self-custody setup. It would have been like a couple of hundred hours of watching YouTube tutorials and videos and things like that, and 3 different countries. And it was fucking complicated, like really fucking complicated. And I thought it was super, super secure. Met up with Tony. He's like, this is just shit. I said it a lot nicer. He's like, let's start again, man. And we start and we build it back up. And you're like, I should have just paid at the start to meet with you guys. I didn't know of Tony at that stage. And you're like, oh my God, this could have been so much easier. And those hours that I spent doing it, I could have been stacking more skills, or I could have been providing value, or I could have just filmed a couple more podcasts, or whatever it is. Like, I could have used that time for something of benefit to the world, or service to the world, or whatever, or service to myself. I could have chilled out and spent time doing something for me instead of doing something where ultimately it just got shredded up and it actually wasn't that safe. It wasn't that secure. It was super complex. If something happened to me, then that Bitcoin probably would have just been donated to the Bitcoin network. And then sitting with Tony, it didn't even take that long. A couple of sessions. Great. Good to go. And for everyone that doesn't know, like, I have partnered with the Bitcoin Way with my longest channel partner. But the best thing is, look, the first 30 minutes is free. So when you call them up, or when you jump on a call with them, it's not costing you anything to be able to find out what would work for you. And you mentioned the website earlier, and to sign up with the newsletter. That's amazing. I'll read, not 100% everyone, because I fucking hate emails in general. Like, I go through hundreds of emails a day, but I'll take it as a brain break, and it's just absolutely amazing. The newsletter, but also that 3-minute survey that you have on the website, I think that's amazing. So if you just go to the Bitcoin Way and then just wait, it'll pop up automatically, or you go to the top on the tab and it says survey there. Take that survey and see how good your current setup is. Like, it's free, it's easy, and you can sign up to the newsletter at the same time. Would be able to do that. Let's, you know, I've got my interest in Bitcoin treasury companies is that I don't understand why people would do it, and for a couple of reasons. It's not Bitcoin in self-custody, like you're saying. If it's not Bitcoin in self-custody, it's not Bitcoin in self-custody. I think that's how you win the game of life. You win the game of Bitcoin. It's Bitcoin and self-custody. It's aside from that, say like you make all these fiat gains over the next 3 to 5 years and you 10x or your 100x your Bitcoin of what Bitcoin would just be, but then you go to sell and you get paid out in fiat capital gains, you deal with that, but you've got all this cash here. What happens if at that stage in your local jurisdiction you can't buy a large amount of Bitcoin and put it into self-custody? What if they stop it at that stage and they only allow the banks to be able to custody the Bitcoin on your behalf if you're going through traditional exchanges? That's what I fear with these Bitcoin treasury companies. What I fear the most is that they're going to be down like 94%, like NACA, or I think most of them are fucking down. I think even MicroStrategy is down hard. I literally don't pay any attention to the prices or whatever. You know, Saylor the other day saying, we're never going to sell our Bitcoin. Then the other day he's saying, like, we could sell the Bitcoin if we had to or whatever, and they're taking out fiat, getting like holding fiat cash reserves and things like this. And you're like, that's not Bitcoin. That's not the separation of money from state. That looks like that's money in the state getting closer and closer in the current system. So I guess without being interested in shitcoins, when you're talking to people, not shitcoins, Bitcoin treasury companies, they're just a shitcoin. That's a Freudian slip. But like, how do you communicate them about them, or do you just totally ignore the conversation? Because I'm sure you've got a lot of clients that say, hey, what do you think MicroStrategy or whatever the other ones are?
I mean, I think we're disinterested for the same reasons you are. We talk about them, you know, on Bitcoin Banter, our biweekly segment that we do on the channel. I mean, the way I frame them is, this is sort of me speaking personally. I don't know that everyone at the Bitcoin way would frame it like this. I think of saving, investing, and speculating. And saving is what you do with Bitcoin and self-custody, right? Like, when you have conviction, you understand it. Like, you just stack sats. You stay humble, you stack sats. And that's my savings vehicle. If I want to invest, it means I want to seek, you know, outsized returns in something that I understand, I'm going to put sweat into, I'm going to, you know, like, I have a fundamental understanding, but I also recognize that it's a riskier, like starting a business could be. I mean, even like, I don't view like real estate is uninteresting to me, because, but like, if you're like, hey, that, you know, for cash flow purposes, like I need to, you know, pay my bills. You know, you could say, hey, I live in a, you know, I know a safe jurisdiction, you know, in a college town where lots of people need to rent, you know, like that could be like an investment that you make, and you understand that you've got counterparty risk, you've got local ordinances to abide by. But for you, the risk that you're taking, you understand it, and you choose to pursue it anyway. Speculating then is, in my view, you know, don't know much about it, but there's a lot of hype. I don't want to have the FOMO of missing out on this, so I'm going to dump some money into it. I think the treasury companies, I think there are a handful of people who are investing in treasury companies. I had Mark Moss on our podcast. I think Mark Moss is investing in treasury companies. I'm not a finance guy, so this stuff is, I don't get it. He does. Like, he is a professional investor.
That's right.
Very well as an investor, and he has conviction in certain treasury. I think, I'm not going to speak for him. My understanding is he has certain convictions and, you know, in a few treasury companies. I don't care because I don't think treasury companies push the ball forward for Bitcoin, and it's not Bitcoin. And so why would I invest in a treasury company versus Nvidia or Apple? Or it's all the same to me. It's just a bunch of fiat companies. For, I don't know, 95% of Bitcoiners, you know, I put that in air quotes, when they invest in a treasury company, I think they're purely speculating. They're hopping on the hype train, and they're hoping that they make 150% returns while Bitcoin only makes 50%. And, you know, it's just like they're YOLOing in. And to me, it's if you just walk through, what if Saylor gets hit by a bus tomorrow? Like, is your conviction and strategy still as high? Here's the thing. If Saylor gets hit by a bus tomorrow, my conviction and strategy, which is not very high anyway, it plummets. And my conviction in Bitcoin is completely unchanged, right? Yeah. It's a globally decentralized open source monetary protocol, right? You know, some guy getting hit by a bus has no impact on that. Yeah. Literally anyone could get hit by a bus tomorrow, and my conviction in Bitcoin is unchanged. So there's managerial risk, there's operational risk, execution risk. So, you know, you like now it appears as though he said, never sell your Bitcoin. And now they might need to sell some of their Bitcoin. You know, that's fine if they think that's the prudent financial decision for the company. But is that what you as an investor or a speculator signed up for? Probably not. Cause all you heard him say for, you know, five years now is never sell your Bitcoin. You've got confiscation risk. I think, you know, 600 plus thousand Bitcoin looks very appealing to a government that's almost $39 trillion in debt. And if they believe that's going to be a wave of the future, it's trivial. They did it in the 1930s with gold. It would be trivial for the federal government to intervene and just confiscate Bitcoin from Coinbase, Fidelity, whoever's custodying for Strategy. to your point, it's everything's KYC'd, right? You're operating through brokerages. You're only getting access to number go up. We could spend an hour on the counterparty risk here and the downside of these products. Maybe you win. Maybe you beat me in fiat terms, but you sure as hell aren't beating me in self-sovereignty terms. And that's the metric that matters. And to me, maybe you just care about dirty fiat and you want to, keep propping up the system. That's not the game for me. So treasury companies are just completely uninteresting personally, and then frustratingly a distraction, I think, for many, as I watch, quote unquote influencers talking about, oh, they missed the boat on NACA. And it's like, did you? It's trading for, so you should, hopefully you're glad you didn't get in at $25 now, because it's trading for what, 50 cents or something. I'm not tracking it closely, but I see the numbers from time to time.
Yeah, your thoughts are very much aligned with mine. Talking about Bitcoin treasury companies like we did just then, that's where I find the interest in it, because it's not Bitcoin in self-custody, but to actually go down the rabbit hole or whatever. But I like that saving, investing, speculating. I think that's bang on. And
you just got to make sure you know what you're doing. Like when you're allocating the value that you've accrued through your labor, what are you doing with that? And if you really understand it, you're probably saving or investing depending on what the technology is. And if you really don't understand it, but everyone else is getting you excited about it, you're probably speculating.
Yeah. The majority of most people. And I don't know, ladies and gentlemen, it's your money. It's your choice. Do as you wish, but just try and get as much Bitcoin in self-custody as humanly possible. I give you 3 years, maybe you got a little bit longer. Earlier, we were sort of saying, you're talking about Tony in Lebanon and what happened with him with the currency collapse. And a lot of people in Australia are like, oh, that'll never happen here. And my first reaction is, like, fuck, that won't happen here, because in the last 5 years, we've lost 50% of our purchasing power already. Like, we're already there. It's just not accelerating as quickly. But, if you had 100 grand 5 years ago, you still got 100 grand in the bank, but it was buying $50,000 worth of stuff. That's a huge issue, in my opinion. And I think it's only going to accelerate and get worse and worse and worse. As the currencies around the world collapse, and the debts grow higher and higher and higher, what do you think is going to happen from governments around the world? Because they're going to see and they're going to know that a lot of people have Bitcoin in self-custody. Are they going to try do a 6102? What type of scenarios do you see playing out as things get more desperate for the state?
I think that I don't know if I would bet on a 6102 or not. I mean, it's on the table. Like, I'm not writing it off. I think that what governments are going to do is they're going to try, like, Bitcoin is like having a key to the chains that have bound you for your whole life. And they're going to try to tighten the chains and hope that you don't find the key. And I think what that means is stable coins are going to turn to CBDCs if they don't just, overtly roll out, government issued CBDCs from the start. I think stable coins feel like a nice trap that they could pull people into, because you associate it with crypto and decentralization, not realizing it's just a centralized entity that's, already censoring transactions. I'm talking about you, Tether.
I was going to ask, that just happened recently. Like, it's happened a lot with Tether, but wasn't it just last week that they censored some major transactions?
Oh, I don't know. I might have missed that. But I think I don't think that's something they shy away from. I think they would, they will share that they worked with law enforcement. I think they've pulled back certain transactions, even sort of like Ethereum did.
Wow.
So I think most people, they think of it as it's crypto. So it's decentralized, right? I've heard that word a lot of times. And so it's much easier for people to, and Tether is extremely efficient as a system, right? Because it's centralized, it's very easy to actually send dollar denominated value around the world borderlessly, not permissionlessly, obviously. But man, they co-opt one of those companies and like Tether, with a massive market share, and suddenly everything you do is surveilled, and they get to decide if you've driven your car around too much, blown too many miles, order too much beef, you know, like, I mean, pick it. And like, those are the ways that I think they can very easily retain people in this sort of digital prison. And I think it happens slowly. And I mean, it's the frog boiling in water kind of thing. You know, I think it's, you don't even know. And then one day you wake up and the water's at a full boil and it's too late. Like you know, the on-ramps, the off-ramps to Bitcoin are closed, or it's been criminalized in some form or fashion. Yeah. And, you know, Bitcoiners are living their best life, you know, in something of a, I hate to say black market, but, you know, just sort of operating kind of independently of the rest of the world and everyone else.
Parallel economy.
Yeah, very much in a parallel economy. I haven't seen the movie. Tony keeps referencing Elysium. Is that a movie?
After Tony referenced it like a couple of times, I've watched two movies on this TV screen. Okay. Like all it does is show my logo. And holy moly, what an incredible movie. But yeah, I feel exactly like that. After Tony kept saying, he's like, it's going to be like Elysium. And I'm like, what's Elysium? He's like, it's a movie. Have you not seen it? I'm like, no. He's like, oh, you better go watch it. If you haven't seen Elysium, well worth your time, Michael. It's great.
I'm not a movie guy, but
neither am I.
Dude, I haven't even seen V for Vendetta. Like, I think I've
neither have I actually.
Oh really? Okay, I've seen The Matrix. That's like the only Bitcoin movie. Oh, I've seen The Big Short. I think that's it though in terms of Bitcoin movies I've watched.
Yeah,
but yeah, no, I think that's probably the way. You know, unfortunately, it's going to go. And you know, the question is, how many people can we get dialed in on this before you're just out of luck? You know, my hope is, and I say that, I think over a long enough time horizon, I think Bitcoin brings a new wave of prosperity and freedom to the world. Because eventually, even if you're in sort of fiat chains in this hypothetical future that we're talking about, if you're someone who can provide value to the world, and I have Bitcoin and you would love to earn Bitcoin and you have something like truly valuable to me, I'll pay you in Bitcoin. Like that's what I have.
That's right.
And then now that person has some Bitcoin. And then if there's another fiat slave who can, you know, provide them some value, you know, they'll take Bitcoin as payment. And I think it begins to sort of, my friend, Daniel White, I don't know if you know Microseed.
Yes.
Yeah, so
I've partnered with Microseed. It's the fucking greatest thing in the world.
It's so good, man. Yeah,
it's amazing. There's a discount code below for everyone. It is just phenomenal. 12 or 24 words on a 1-inch washer. That's
a 1-inch washer. It's amazing. But anyway, Daniel has a he sort of frames it as Bitcoin is the antibody that is slowly overtaking this. It's like biological system that we think of as the global economy, I guess. And it's funny, he and I, like, he's one of my favorite Bitcoiners. We tend to disagree every time we talk about, but I think he's onto it with this. I think how he views it playing out versus how I view it, it will play out in the future are a bit different. But I do think like Bitcoin will ultimately serve as the antibody for this diseased body that is the global economy today.
When you first said Daniel's last name, when I think of Daniel, I just think of Daniel 21E15.
Yeah.
Like every time. I'm like, who the hell are you talking about? But yeah, what a guy. If you haven't seen that podcast Robin Sayer and Daniel and I did together, as fun as. I agree with you. And like that point of not being able to get Bitcoin in self-custody, I truly give it 3 years. Like if you're wrong or I'm wrong, but people have Bitcoin in self-custody, it actually doesn't matter. Like it's still number go up technology. It's sovereign money. It's freedom money. So you get all the benefits of that. But if shit does hit the fan and it turns into George Orwell's 1984 or whatever, it's too late a day after or an hour after. You can't possibly do it at that stage. So you're better to be, you know, a couple of years early, or you could be a couple of weeks or a couple of months early. Like who knows with the political landscape at the moment, like, politics in Australia are pretty crazy. You know, what we see in regards to the US seems pretty crazy. The whole world just seems pretty crazy because it's based on fear, and I think it's going to get worse. I want to flip gears. It's something that I'm pretty interested about. My wife is a little bit older than me, so we're not going to be able to have kids. That door in our life is well and truly shut, but I do believe that especially Bitcoiners, because they're going to have the capacity, their critical thinking. They're also going to have the wealth. Kids aren't that cheap to be able to raise, right. But it's one common thing that I've seen within like a lot of Bitcoiners is Brian D. Mint, Daniel Prince, and yourself. It sounds like you're homeschooling your kids. What's that journey been like? And have you been homeschooling them even before Bitcoin? And
no, that's a post-Bitcoin thing.
Nice.
I think we would have been interested in it regardless. I think we're all in at this point. My oldest is only in first grade, so she's seven. So we're still very new. Like, we're really only 2 years into the homeschooling journey. One thing for me that I, you know, we kind of talked about the, I guess, the division of labor between my wife and I. And the more I sort of learn and grow in my conviction about a number of things, and hopefully, you know, as much as I'm happy with self-sovereign money, eventually I'd love the number to go up just because it would allow me more financial freedom to spend time with my son. So he's almost five. And I think boys and girls need to be educated differently. I mean, I think the basics of
reading, writing,
and all that stuff, I think is great. One of my concerns I told my wife is, I can't believe I'm saying some of this stuff on a podcast. I'm usually a little more measured. I said, you know, my problem. So right now my son is in like preschool. So he goes to like a small private school. The values align like a couple days a week for a couple of hours sort of thing. It's like, you know, fun for him, socializing, that kind of thing. But once next year, when he starts kindergarten, that's when we start homeschooling him. But I told my wife, I said, I don't know what the breakdown is, but basically like 90% of teachers are women. And I was like, that's awesome for my daughter. Like that, great. You know? Like I want her to learn from, you know, first of all, my wife, first and foremost, I want her to be like my wife and not like some other woman. But in general, at the little school that my son goes to, perfectly comfortable with the character, the philosophy of the school. You know, I don't have an issue with those women interacting with my daughter on a daily basis, but I'm obviously happy that we're not anyway, and she's homeschooling. I was like, I don't want my son going and being taught all day, every day, and influenced for 7 hours a day by women. Like like, I want him to be influenced by men, predominantly good men who want his, you know, the best for him and expect the best from him. And, you know, there's a great Steve Harvey video that I watched recently. I sent to my wife. He was talking about how when his dad died, he realized that the only man on earth who wanted Steve to be better than him had died. Every other man wants you to, my best friend, I love him. I want, you know, something great for him, but I don't want him to be better than me, right? My son, I want him to be better than me. I want him to be orders of magnitude better than me. And I'm the only man on earth who wants that for him. And so when it comes to homeschooling, my intention is for me to be much more involved in my son's education and my wife to be much more involved in my daughter's education, because I want them to be reflections of us, reflections of who we strive to be, and then to, you know, soar far beyond anything that my wife and I are. And I think that's probably the only way we can do it. And you can't handpick teachers the way that, you know, and certainly not in public schools, but even in private schools, you're kind of stuck with who you've got. And I'd rather me be teaching my son the things I want him to learn. And certainly I'll be teaching him very different things than he would ever learn in a formal educational environment. But I want my daughter to learn from my wife. And I sort of had some, I was like, man, am I off on this? Is this like too traditional? But the more I think about it, I think there's a lot to be said. You know, I would have benefited from being homeschooled by my dad specifically. And I think my sister would have benefited from being homeschooled by my mom specifically. And, you know, you're kind of mixing and matching and sharing different skills and that sort of thing along the way, certainly. But like homeschool for me is it's like a non-negotiable at this point. And I think it's going to evolve immensely. And I'm trying to take notes from guys like Daniel. He's like very unstructured, and he's given me some good book recommendations I need to dive into. But that's kind of where my head's at the moment.
Daniel's like a walking encyclopedia with book references.
Oh, but yeah.
Just absolutely amazing. like when you're saying this, I'm just thinking in the back of my head, oh my God, somebody's going to say he is so misogynistic with his views about that.
Yeah.
But when you go down, like think critically about it, it just makes sense. Like it's just common sense. Do you think within Bitcoin, like we're going to go through this like really rough time, and I think it's going to happen roughly within the next 3 years. The big print, digital IDs, CBDCs, it's just going to be fucking chaotic as well. But however long it takes to transition to the other side, I'm not saying we're going to transition onto a Bitcoin standard after the next dystopian 3 years. I don't think that's going to happen. I think this could be like way down the track, 15, 20, 30 years plus. But as Bitcoin becomes the world denominator, the new monero, do you think some of these maybe conservative or traditional values are going to be able to come back? Men are going to be allowed to be strong. Women are going to be allowed to be women. You know, kids can just be kids and we can get rid of like a little bit of the nonsense. Or do you just think the world's too far gone?
No, I think it'll be a requirement that we vacate some of these nonsensical first century ideas, because I think at least when we reach a Bitcoin standard, the only way to earn a living is to be competent, is to provide real world value. And today you can, you know, get by with not providing much real world value and still be employed and get health insurance and, you know, save a little bit. And I think on a sound money standard, that no longer becomes an option. I think it's going to be a painful transition because there's going to be a generation or two of people who are still alive of working age when that happens, who haven't acquired any skills and now are suddenly trying to figure out what do I do. No one's going to part ways with their Bitcoin for anything I have to offer, and it's going to be messy. But I think on the other side of that is a generation that grows up realizing I can't be fat and weak, and I can't be stupid, and I can't spend my entire life just playing video games and eating whatever I want to eat, and because no one's coming to save me. Like right now there is someone kind of coming to save you, right? Like they'll shoot you up with Ozempic, or they'll, you know, send you a welfare check or whatever. And on a sound money standard, it's no longer an option. I mean, quite literally. And I think because of that, the people who choose not to care for themselves, who choose not to accumulate skills that are useful in the world, I think are going to suffer. And, you know, hopefully there are good, generous, charitable people who, you know, will choose to help them, train them, you know, teach a man to fish kind of thing. But in the interim, I think it's going to be messy. But I think we'll get to that point where the expectation is you're competent, you're respectful, you're strong, capable. And I think that's going to be I think what Bitcoin really does on that is, I'm not a fix the money, fix the world guy anymore. I'm a fix the incentives, fix the world guy. I think Bitcoin fixes a lot of the broken incentives. At the end of the day, though, it always comes down to human action. There will still be people who choose to be lazy or fat or to not produce value, even on a Bitcoin standard. And they're just going to suffer in a way that they've been able to sort of skate by on a fiat standard.
Yep. I guess on that note, ladies and gentlemen, get Bitcoin into self-custody. If you want to connect with the Bitcoin way, again, the first 30 minutes is free. I've linked them at the top of the description. They're always the first link. But Michael, I just want to hand it over, take a minute or so, if you've got a final message for the audience, anything top of mind, and we'll see everyone on the next video.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Sean, thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast. I think I've opened up on this podcast more than several of the others. Hopefully you don't get canceled, and hopefully people aren't too hateful. Yeah. First of all, I'd just love to say, you know, follow me. I'm mostly active on X, Twitter, whatever we're calling it. It's at the other M Jordan. If you want to link to that in the description.
I will, but for sure. I'll put all your links.
Go check out the Bitcoin Way. As a client turned employee, I can't say enough good things. I've never been happier in my work, and it's not just because I like the guys. I love the guys, but what we're doing is, I think, something truly special and incredible. Everyone should take full self-custody of their Bitcoin. And the last thing I'd say is, we talked about treasury codes and all these, all the noise amongst the little bit of signal. What I always like to say is that the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.
Love it.
when that begins to resonate and you internalize that, I think amazing things happen. Your life changes for the better. And I hope everyone listening can reach that point.
Mate, it's been absolutely amazing. I have seconded that wrap up there. But for everyone out there, all Michael's links are below. Connect with the Bitcoin Way. The free survey, it's freaking amazing. It's just do it. Find out where you stand with your self-custody setup, the newsletter. And then, of course, go out, do something nice for yourself today, for somebody else out there. Be blessed. Peace.